After college here in the Lower Mainland, I moved to Victoria to attend a small university to finish my commerce degree. Now, like most students, I rented a room in a large house with a bunch of other students, all of them who I didn't even know. There was about six of us in this one house, each with our own individual rooms. Now, initially, there was a sense of excitement. I just moved to a new city, I was starting a new program, and so I felt like I had a lot to look forward to. But eventually, that excitement started to fade. I quickly started to miss my family and friends that were back in Vancouver. And what made the move even harder was that these roommates that I was living with weren't that interested in connecting with each other. There wasn't anyone interested in becoming friends. Everyone just stayed in their room and didn't really interact with anyone. And so even though I was surrounded by people, I felt incredibly alone in this new environment. So alone that I almost quit my program and moved back home. There's no question that one of the biggest challenges of this last year has been the relational strain and isolation caused by COVID-19. And this last year has reminded me a lot of that experience in university. Not being able to see family and friends has been extremely hard and difficult. And I know that's an experience that a lot of us have, that relational strain where our relationships have been shrunk down to Zoom calls, text messages, and emails. But as I've thought about my own frustrations around not seeing people that I care about, frustrations I'm sure you have as well, it's made me ask the question, why are relationships so important to us? What is it about staying connected with our family and friends and not being able to see them that makes it so hard in this last year? And could it be that that desire we have to be connected, that longing we have for relationships, is a desire that's worth paying attention to? Over the last number of weeks, we've been in a series called Rhythms of Grace, where we've been exploring the spiritual practices of Jesus with the hope that we might adopt those practices for ourselves. We've seen how Jesus' baptism reminded him of how loved and cherished he was, how he was filled with the Holy Spirit, and how he intentionally made space for prayer. And today, we're going to see how Jesus pursued relationships with others and how we're invited to do the same. Now, after Jesus is baptized, he spends 40 days in the wilderness being tested by Satan. And coming out of the wilderness experience, Jesus is about to begin his public work. He's about to teach people what God looks like and begin to unfold God's rescue plan for humanity. But as Jesus is about to embark on this new season, this new ministry opportunity, he doesn't begin by teaching to large crowds and healing people and doing all sorts of miracles. But instead, here's what he does first. In Matthew 4, verse 18, we read, "As Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. 'Come follow me,' Jesus said, 'and I will send you out to fish for people.' At once they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him." So as Jesus is beginning his public work in the world, he's walking along the Lake of Galilee, and he comes across these four fishermen. Now, based on what we know about these men, they were hardworking, ordinary individuals who were catching fish for a living. And he approaches these ordinary individuals, and he offers this simple invitation of "follow me." Now, "follow me" is very different. There's a very different meaning in Jesus's context than it does in ours. To follow someone today means to follow their social media platform. It's where you can passively observe someone else's life through a screen, someone whom you may not even know. But in Jesus's day, this phrase meant so much more. There was nothing passive about it. "Follow me" was a relational invitation. Being a rabbi or teacher, "follow me" was Jesus' way of inviting these fishermen to become his students. It was his way of saying, "Would you join your life with me? And would you follow me? And would you learn from me? Would you become my students?" This was a personal invitation to be connected to Jesus. And so here at the beginning of his public work in the world, before doing anything significant, Jesus first pursues relationships. He chooses to build a group of friends who can surround him and join him in his work in the world. He doesn't do life alone, but he chooses to share his life with others. Now, this is pretty amazing, because if there was anyone who could exist in isolation without connecting with other people, then surely it would be Jesus, the Son of God, right? But that's not the case. In Genesis, the first book of the Bible, we read about how the first ever relationship to exist is with God himself in the Trinity, Father, Son, and Spirit, existing in perfect relationship with each other. And so Jesus has always existed in relationship. It's a part of who he is. And in Genesis, we read about how God creates the world that we see around us. He creates the heavens, the earth, plants, animals, and everything he creates is complete and whole. And this relational God says, let us make human beings in our image. And so this relational God creates an image bearer in the person of Adam. But then there's a problem in the sequence of events. In Genesis 2, God says it's not good for the man to be alone. A man being alone is the first thing not good in this perfect world that God has created. And so he creates an equal companion and partner in Eve, someone who can join him and complete his relational gap. And ever since then, people have existed in relationships, whether romantic, friendship, or families, people have been connected to one another. It's not good for people to be alone. As image bearers of God, it's in our makeup to be connected to other people. It's who we are. That's why social distancing is so hard, because we weren't designed to be apart, but together. And when we find ourselves relationally disconnected, we can feel like something is missing in us, that something's not quite right, or that we're lacking in some way. You know, over this last year, we've seen people's mental health decline quite significantly. The Pacific Blue Cross has reported that before COVID started, around 19% of people in BC said that they were struggling with their mental health. And during COVID, that number has gone up to 52% of people saying that they're struggling with their mental health, especially for those who are living alone and in isolation. This has been a really hard time. I read about a senior who was living in a fairly independent care home. And the nature of the care home meant that she saw a nurse for maybe about 20 minutes a day. But other than that, she was left on her own with no interactions and no connections with other people. And she found herself so alone and so isolated that she would often just turn on the TV just so she could hear the voice of another person to try and offer some sort of relief to her loneliness that she was feeling. This has been a really hard season for those of us who feel like we're just alone. And on the other end of the loneliness spectrum, there are those of us who might have a lot of family and friends and a lot of relational connections, but we feel isolated and alone because no one really knows who we are. We feel a different type of loneliness because we feel unknown and anonymous, even though we have these daily interactions with people. And so how would you describe yourself today? Do you feel alone? Do you feel unknown? If so, it's important to pay attention to those feelings and to consider what they might be driving you towards. Jesus pursued relationships with others. And the relationship of a rabbi and student in the first century was very different than the relationships that we have today. But even still, there's something that we can learn from this experience of Jesus. You see, Jesus wasn't just building friends that you could hang out with and shoot the breeze. No, he was building an intimate community. He was creating an environment where these fishermen's lives could be transformed and changed. He was creating a community where they could learn to rely on one another, where they could learn to be seen by one another, and ultimately, where they could grow. And that's the hope of spiritual friendships. It's growth. It's where we don't stay the same, but as we join our lives with other people, we grow more into the people that God has created us to be. As Jesus offers this invitation to follow him, he makes these fishermen a promise. He says, if you join me in this work that I'm doing, you will no longer be people who catch fish, but you'll be fishers of people, meaning that you'll be so transformed by this relationship with me and with one another that you'll be unleashed on a new mission in the world of sharing my message of hope, forgiveness, and grace with the world. What if instead of viewing our relationships as purely social or functional, What if we saw them as the places that God most deeply wanted to form us? What if one of the primary ways we grow is with other people? When I began a relationship with Jesus, I didn't really see a need for the church or to really be connected to other people at all. I had this belief that I could just have a relationship with Jesus on my own, that I could just be me and Jesus. But even though I was immersing myself in the scriptures and connecting with God through prayer, I felt like something was missing. My faith felt a bit stagnant, like something was off. Now, at the same time, I was hanging out with a friend named Nate. And Nate also happened to be a follower of Christ, but we never talked about our faith. We had a sort of superficial friendship where we just talked about different things that weren't really important to us. Our faith never really entered into our friendship. But one night when we were hanging out, Nate shared openly about something he was struggling with in his faith journey, something that was really important to him. And that conversation changed our friendship because for the first time ever, we talked about Jesus in a way that we had never talked about. And not only that, but his openness and willingness to share encouraged me to do the same. And so I began sharing things that I was struggling with in my faith journey. And that experience not only changed our friendship, but it changed my faith. It helped me see the value of being connected with another person, to have someone who could challenge me in my faith, someone I could bring my questions to, and someone who would pray for me was something that I was really lacking, but I didn't really even know it. And my faith in Jesus grew in ways that I couldn't have accessed on my own. I realized the value of being connected to other people. A spiritual director named Morris Dirks has put it this way. He said, it's impossible to experience spiritual transformation outside of relationships. And that's definitely been true of my experience and others that I know. We need other people to help us grow into the people that God has created us to be. Now, there's no question that relationships are hard, that people can sometimes be difficult. I'm sure we've all had experiences of dealing with difficult people, whether at work or in our social circles. And that was definitely true of Jesus and his friends as well. In Luke 22, we read about an argument that breaks out among the disciples. They're debating about who is more important. And you can almost imagine Jesus' frustration as he just shakes his head and lets out a sigh as he tries to encourage them on what his mission is in the world and to try and set their head straight. This is probably just one of many different disagreements that emerged in this friendship circle. And so, like Jesus and his friends, we can experience dealing with difficult people and some of the frustrations that causes as we put ourselves in community with others. But we can also experience a level of risk. There's a risk in being hurt by people. We can get burned as we put ourselves in relationships with others. I mean, look at Jesus. Out of the 12 friends that he surrounds himself with, one of them betrays him, Peter denies even knowing him, and the rest seem to scatter when Jesus needs them the most. But the amazing thing is that Jesus knew all of this even before he met them. He knew how they would respond to difficulty. He knew that they would hurt him and that they would let him down. But even still, he pursued them. He saw this friendship circle that he was creating as valuable and worth pursuing, even knowing all the risks that was involved with it. And so I wonder if we can be like Jesus and pursue relationships, even though it's hard, even though it requires a lot of work in a world where Zoom is our primary way of connecting with people, but we still pursue it. Even though people are sometimes frustrating and maybe even annoying, we still involve ourselves in relational circles. And even if there's a possibility of the risk of being hurt, we pursue that risk because the opportunity to grow in these spiritual communities can be so great and so important. Mother Teresa said this. She said, keep in mind that our community is not composed of those who are already saints, but of those who are trying to become saints. Therefore, let us be extremely patient with each other's faults and failures. Christian community is about following Jesus with other people, people who are different than us. And as we rub shoulders with people who share different perspectives, people who have different stories, and people who are on different journeys, we grow and are formed in ways that we can't grow on our own. We're able to see more of who God is the more we see other people. For the last number of years, my family and I have had the privilege of being a part of a life group here at 10th. And everyone in our group is different. We all have different stories and different backgrounds. But as we've brought our lives together and have tried to model transparency and openness, I feel like I've gotten a small taste of the type of community that Jesus was trying to build. This last year, our group has not only been trying to navigate COVID together, but we've also had a number of shared losses that we've tried to navigate as well. Losses that have been hard and painful and really, really challenging. And as odd as it seems, it's in these shared losses where I'm reminded why community is so important. Even in my own experience of loss, I feel like my group has helped me see Jesus in a really hard time in my life. Even though we can't be physically together, through dropping off meals, through sending text messages and offering countless prayers on my behalf, I feel like I've been held by this group in ways that would have been really hard to go through on my own. This group has reminded me that God is present with me, even though life is really hard. And so what unites our group is not our interests, not our personalities, but it's a shared love of Jesus and a desire to learn what it means together to follow him. Follow him when life is going well and when life is extremely hard. An author named Henry Nouwen said it like this. He said, "Christian community is a place where we keep the flame of hope alive among us, and we take it seriously so that it can grow and become stronger in us." That's the hope of joining our lives with other people, is that we grow and we're shaped and we're formed, and we continuously push one another to the person of Christ to continuously fix our eyes on him. The amazing thing about Jesus as he begins his public ministry is he doesn't passively wait for friends to follow him. He doesn't wait for people to just join him in this mission, but he actively pursues them. What about you? What would it look like for you to pursue spiritual friendships? Imagine a community like Jesus's, where you could be known by other people and where you could know others. A community where you can be fully transparent. A community where you can be molded and shaped more in the image of Christ. Jesus reminds us that we're not meant to live life alone, but that life truly is better together. And I don't know where you're at in your faith journey, but let me ask you these questions. Are there spiritual friendships in your life? Do you feel like you have people who really know the real you? If not, what would that next step be for you? Maybe it's connecting with a life group or a soul trios here at 10th. We've made it really easy for you to do so by visiting 10th.ca/together, where you can get connected to one of these amazing relational circles that we have open right now. Or maybe for you, that next step is looking at the people that are already in your life and asking the question, who do I need to go deeper with? Who do I need to turn from a superficial friendship to a spiritual friendship? But whatever that next step is for you, do something. Pursue relationships. Jesus makes these fishermen a promise that when they join their life to him, that they're going to be changed and transformed. And the amazing thing is, it happens. These fishermen are so radically transformed by this relationship with Jesus and with one another that they start a movement that sweeps across the planet and that births the church. They join Jesus in his mission in the world because of this relational circle that Jesus had built. Imagine what God could do in and through you as you allow yourself to enter into community with others. Even though we can't be physically together, don't let this season keep you relationally disconnected. But would you be like Jesus? Would you be a person who pursues relationships with others?